So why don't we start with the flag salute? Everybody has their own flag.
Absolutely. Hanging right in front of me.
To the flag of the United States of America. And to the Republic
for which it stands,
one nation,
under God,
indivisible, liberty
and justice for all.
Is the March 1st, 2021 virtual public meeting of the Planning Board of the Township of Clinton, County of Hunterdon, State of New Jersey. Adequate notice of this meeting has been given in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act, and then an annual notice was published in the Hunterdon County Democrat, and the notice of an agenda for this meeting was posted on the Township website, the bulletin boards at the front of your municipal building, the front door of the public safety building, and faxed to the Hunterdon County Democrat, the Express Times, the Courier News, the Hunterdon Review, and the Star Ledger no later than the Friday prior to the meeting. Madam Secretary, would you call the roll, please?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Butcher?
Call it again.
Yes, Ms. Butcher, I think you're still on mute.
You're still muted. There we go.
Thank you. Mr. Glaser?
Here.
Mr. Higgins?
Here.
Ms. Kleinhand?
Here.
Mr. Lazarus?
Here.
Mr. Millay?
Here.
Mr. Scheich?
Absent so far.
And Mr. Semay?
Here.
You have a quorum, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We have a little bit of housekeeping to take care of here for the applicants or anyone else, so just bear with us for a few minutes. First up, we do have some, you know, and I'm going to throw this over to John and Denise, but we have some revised oaths of office because we've had some changes with Mr. Glaser being selected for the town council. Congratulations, Bill.
Congratulations.
And I think once we do that, John and Denise, we probably should redo the vice chair and vice chair pro tem.
Yep. So Denise, who has to be sworn in to what positions?
Okay, so Bill Glaser will be sworn into seat 3, class 3. Sandra will be moving from alternate 2 to alternate 1. And Higgins will be moving to seat 7, class 4. He was previously an alternate.
Repeat that again. Last one.
Seat 7, class 4.
Right. Who?
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Higgins.
Okay. And when you say seat 7, those are the physical seats that you put him in?
That's a good question. I got that from John and Brian's list. They keep track of the seat.
I don't think the seated number is meaningful, John.
Yeah, okay. I've never heard that.
Yeah.
The class, okay, or the alternate, okay. Maybe I missed something. Okay, so
we did have seat gate years ago. That was a big
okay. John, when I became there was I would say the records were lacking on the board. So each seat got a number. And it doesn't tie to that. There's nothing special about it, except that you can keep track precisely who sat in what chair. That's all.
That's very neat. Okay. Learn something new every day. So, Mr. Glaser and Ms. Butcher and Mr. Higgins, do all of you have an oath of office in front of you?
Yes,
we do.
So I'm going to ask all three of you to please raise your right hand, and then you can read your oaths to yourself, and then when you're done, look up because I want to see you sign them. Let the reading begin.
mute.
I am signing.
I'll scan the signs. Right. You're going to scan them to Denise and me. I will then notarize them, and I will email them back. I will scan them and email them back to Denise. So congratulations, all three of you.
Thank you.
So we could do that tomorrow, John, or later this evening?
Later this evening, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And then is the planning board now at full strength? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
There's a vacancy at the second alternate.
Okay. Okay.
Good. Denise, I think I noticed El Associate, which was and typically has been Mr. Scheich. Rich, is that you?
I'm here. Sneaking along, trying to get on.
Okay.
All right.
Having a different time connecting today.
Okay, thank you. I will mark you as in sent.
So the second impact of the change in seats has been that Mr. Glazer, who had agreed to and been elected as vice chair, that's only available to class four
members.
Thank you. I'm a little. So the vice chair is now open. And if you remember, we also just didn't do the second one, the vice chair pro tem. So is there nominations for vice chair?
I'd like to nominate the former mayor, John Higgins, and former planning board chairman, John Higgins.
Second.
And our second, Mr. Glazer, thank you. Any other nominations or? How about a roll call?
So how about a motion, a second, then a roll call?
I'll make the motion. John Higgins.
And I'll second the motion.
Thank you. Roll call.
Okay, Mr. Ginsburg.
Sandra, we didn't hear you again.
Yes. Mr. Glazer?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins?
I was staying on this.
No.
I'll kill him. Okay, I'll do that to yourself. All right.
Mr. Lazarus?
Yes.
Mr. Millay?
Yes.
Mr. Scheich?
Yes.
And Mr. Sinai?
Yes.
And let the record reflect, I did call Ms. Butcher, but now that Mr. Scheich is here, we did not need her vote.
Okay, thank you for keeping track. We've typically as well done this vice chair pro
tem.
John pro tem. We rarely use it, so it's you know, it's probably more just insurance policy than not. But if folks are so inclined, now that we're pretty much at full staff here, with the exception of the one alternate, you know, we could fill that one as well.
Yeah, I would think that would be a good idea, and I'd like to move Suzanne Kleinhans to serve as the vice chair pro tem.
Lazarus, second.
Thank you. Anything else? Anyone else? If not, is there a motion?
Well, I would like to propose John Lazarus chair.
You're not gonna get a second.
So now we have a contested election.
Oh, this is...
Well, if John agrees to serve.
If either of them, I don't So what do we do here, John?
You have a straw poll vote. Whoever wins the straw poll of only those members that can vote, then you make a motion to appoint that person after. So you need a straw poll. And the straw poll, Denise should call each person, each board member's name, and they should indicate who they vote for as the vice chair pro tem.
May I ask a question quickly? Would it be fair to ask both nominees if they are willing to serve?
Yeah, that would be a fair question.
You want up for it.
So, Brian, you have to ask him.
Oh, would both nominees be willing to serve?
I would be willing to serve, but I would defer to Ms. Conahan if she is willing.
I think John would be a good one. I mean, don't you think so? So, Denise, can you do a straw poll?
Yes. Now, in this case, would I call the alternate for a straw poll on Sandra or no?
No, if you have all the regular members, you just use it. You just call the regular members.
Okay, just checking. Okay, Mr. Glaser?
Well, given Suzanne's strong endorsement, John Lazarus.
Okay. Mr. Higgins?
Well, I have a condition. First of all, I know how busy Suzanne should be with United Way tax returns and stuff like that. With the proviso that she promises to continue looking hard at meeting minutes and that sort of thing, I would go with John.
Okay. Ms. Kleinhand?
I would go with John as well.
Mr. Lazarus?
Kleinhand.
Mr. Malay?
Well, it goes against my better judgment. I'm going to say Lazarus.
Oh, it's leaning. Mr.
Shank? It's also up here, so I'll go with John Lazarus.
And Mr. Samay?
At this point, my vote doesn't matter, I think, but I'll go with Mr. Lazarus based on Ms. Kleinhand's comments.
Okay, so just to dot the I's and cross the T's, let's have someone make a motion to appoint Mr. Lazarus as the vice chair pro tem.
I'll make the motion to appoint Mr. Lazarus as the vice chair pro tem.
Someone going to second it?
I'll second. That was Kevin.
Kevin, was that you for a second?
Yeah. Roll call.
Okay. Mr. Glaser? Mr. Higgins?
Yes.
Ms. Kleinhand?
Yes.
Mr. Lazarus?
No.
Is that a serious no?
I was just, it was a deal. Yes.
Okay. I just want to know what to put in the record. Mr. Blay?
Yes.
Mr. Shike?
Yes.
And Mr. Samay?
Yes.
The motion carries. Congratulations, Mr. Lazarus.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you. We have one more appointment on the professionals from the January meeting that we want to do, and it's the radio frequency engineer. And he's been the previous expert or professional, Charles A. Hecht of Charles A. Hecht and Associates. Is there any questions or comments or concerns or discussion? If not, is there a motion to appoint Mr. Hecht as the radio frequency engineer?
I'll make the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Shike.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Ms. Kleinhans. Roll call, please.
Mr. Glaser?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins?
Yes.
Ms. Kleinhans?
Yes.
Mr. Lazarus?
Yes.
Mr. Malay?
Yes.
Mr. Shike?
Yes.
And Mr. Samay?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. And finally, we do have some meeting minutes. They were distributed with the meeting package. They're for the January 11th, 2021 meeting. The eligible members are noted on the agenda there. Are there any questions or comments or suggested revisions to those minutes? Not hearing any. Is there a motion to approve based on those eligible members?
I'll make the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Scheich.
I'll second.
Who was that, Mr. Higgins?
Glaser.
Oh, Mr. Glaser. Thank you. Roll call.
Okay, Mr. Glaser?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins?
Yes.
Ms. Blindham?
Yes.
Mr. Lazarus?
Yes.
Mr. Millay?
Yes.
Mr. Scheich?
Yes. Yes.
And Mr. Smith.
Yes.
The motion carries.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, everybody. We are now, there are no resolutions. We are now at the public hearings. We've got two. The first one up is T-Mobile Northeast, LLC, 1418 Route 22, Block 13.01, Lot 1. This is application 2020-09. And the applicant is seeking amended site plan approval for the differences between the approved height of stealth tree monopole structure and the as-built structure. We have Mr. Frank Ferraro here, I believe, representing the applicant.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, everybody. Frank Ferraro, firm of Ferraro, applicant. T-Mobile Northeast LLC. Hope everyone is doing well. Mr. Chairman, I'll give a brief overview of the application. Also with me is Josh Cottrell, who is our professional engineer and prepared the site plan that you have. We are asking for amended site plan in this application. T-Mobile was approved for the permanent tower back in 2016, and there were some minor modifications that were approved by the board. Since then, originally the tower was approved with 9 antennas. The board in 2019 approved us to go to 12. The purpose of tonight's application, as council indicated, is that the as-built drawing differs from what the board approved back in 2016 slightly. The discrepancies have to do with the top of the monopine. The tower structure itself, the superstructure, was approved up to 110 feet. It was constructed to a height of 111 feet 2 inches. In addition, T-Mobile's antenna center line was supposed to be at 100 feet. And it was actually constructed at 101 feet 1 inch. The top of the monopole, there's faux branches that extend above it. It was approved at 115 feet, but was actually constructed at a slightly lower height, 114 feet 8 inches. There's a GPS antenna that's attached to the equipment area that was approved at 9 feet and installed at a height of 10 feet 5 inches. And then the equipment height, which is really, I think, a product of the fact that the equipment's evolved since it was originally approved in 2016. But the ultimate height of the equipment at the original approval was 6 feet 4 inches, and the equipment cabinets that are out there are at a height of 7 foot 6 inches. So those are the deviations from the originally approved plan that we noted. We can have Mr. Cottrell go over plan with the board and just highlight those deviations. We did ask for a number of waivers in our application, and in my understanding, those were all granted by memo.
Right, the waivers are now handled administratively, so you don't have to discuss them at all.
Okay, perfect. So those are the five deviations that are noted in our application. like I said, Mr. Coswell can review the site plan for the board and just highlight those, you know, those areas.
Before he reviews that, I want to make sure I understand. So what you're saying is the deviations are from what was approved in 2016, not what was approved in 2019. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, I guess it could be both, John, because the antennas were approved at a center line of 100 feet, and that was in 2016. In 2019, we were approved to put three more antennas up there, but it was still at a center line of 100 feet. So that center line.
Did you remove nine antennas and put 12 in, or did you add three?
They added three.
Right. But I know that Mr. Kasha will go through this, but I want to understand this. Are all the antennas at a higher center line that they should have been, or just the new three?
Oh, okay. All of the antennas that are at a higher center line, at that time, and maybe Josh can, you know, just confirm this, I don't believe those antennas were installed yet at the time that we got the approval to add three more.
Okay. All right, now I understand, but I'm sure people are going to have some questions, but let's get Mr. Cottrell sworn in, and let's get Mr. Barron sworn in. So can both of you raise your right hand? And Mr. Cottrell, both of you have to unmute so I can hear you say I do. And do both of you swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth?
I do.
I do.
Okay.
So, Mr. Kasha, if you can please review your background and qualifications for the board and public.
Sure. I have a Bachelor of Science in Civil Engineering at Rutgers University, approximately 20 years experience, site plan design, last 13 years specifically geared towards telecommunications. I still have a valid New Jersey license, engineering license in the state of New Jersey. I've testified in front of numerous boards, including this one for the original application for this site.
Mr. Chairman, are there any additional questions of Mr. Cottrell?
I don't have anybody. Does anybody else on the board have any questions of?
And what the chair is asking, does anyone have any questions about his qualifications?
About his qualifications, yes.
Especially new board members that may not have seen him testify before. And you're a PE, correct?
Correct.
I'm not hearing any, and since he's been here before, we have no concerns with his qualifications.
So you're going to accept him as a professional engineering expert?
Professional engineering expert.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mr. Cottrell, the plans that were submitted last revised 10/29/2020, were they prepared by you or under your supervision?
Yes, they were.
Okay. And if you can, are we going to bring the plans up on the screen, or?
Should I do that?
So I have made you a presenter, if you're comfortable doing that. Are you able to do that?
I can try. I'm on my home computer. I'm logged into my work computer, so I'll see if it works.
Hold on. Denise, can you put these plans up or not?
Yes, I can. Hold on.
Why don't we have, well, we'll ask Denise to do it. I just think it will be quicker that way. And Denise, if you can mute yourself, because we get a lot of feedback. Great, thanks. And then, Mr. Cottrell, you can tell Denise what sheet you want her to focus on.
It looks like SP4 is probably going to be.
Okay, SP4.
It's the fifth sheet in the set.
Now, Denise, once you get to SB4, if you can blow it up as large as will fit in the screen, that would be great.
And Denise, the other thing you can do is on the bottom right, you can kind of hide that right side pane. There's a little arrow at the very bottom, right where next to it says DF.
Okay, there you go, Mr. Hartrell.
One more sheet.
That's not SB4?
No, SB4 is actually the fifth sheet in the set.
Okay. That was practice, Denise. There we go.
All right. So this sheet is just showing on the left-hand side of the screen the approved elevation, and on the right-hand side of the screen is the as-built elevation. As Frank just went over, if we start from the ground up, you can see the top of the approved equipment height was 6'4", where the installed is 7'6". It also shows the GPS at the approved height of 9 feet, and to the right, the installed height of 10'5". And then moving up to the center line of the antennas, the approved center line is 100 feet, where the as-built is 101 and 1 inch. The top of the monopole structure itself was approved at 110. We are currently sit at 111 feet, 2 inches. And the top of the fake branch is approved at 115. We're actually 4 inches lower at 114 foot, 8 inch.
And those are the differences between the approved tower and equipment and what was constructed at the time.
Sorry, hold on a sec.
That's his helper.
so the difference from the approved and the actually installed, what sits there today.
Okay. So in researching this with construction and trying to figure out why this happened, why do we think this happened?
Well, the most likely cause is the monopole comes in three sections, and the way they are fit together is they're spliced together, so it's kind of one fits into the other. So let's say the bottom section and the middle section splice together. So the middle section actually slips into the bottom section. So it's a kind of a slip connection. But the manufacturer gives a tolerance of about 10%. So I think in this case, the bottom and the middle section were supposed to splice together and overlap 82 inches. But they allow a 10% tolerance. And then the middle section, the top section, I think had about a 70 inch. So the likely cause is that the 12 inches, the 14 inches could be in that splice somewhere. They didn't get the full splice recommended, but they got enough splice for the tolerance.
It was within the manufacturer's specifications, correct?
Right. If you take 10% of all the splices, it could be up to 24 inches either way. So we've got about 14 inches. That's likely the cause. Other causes could be that the grading at the foundation wasn't per plan. It could be a couple inches off. They could have exposed the foundation a little higher than 6 inches. I don't know if that's the case, but these are all possible scenarios and probably combination of all of them is why there's 14 inches off.
And this was a custom monopine, correct?
Correct.
Custom design. So this wasn't one off the rack. This was actually a first of its kind, correct? We designed it.
Right. Specifically for this site, yes.
We used to refer to these trees as the Delbarton tree.
That's right.
That's right. But that tree, that specific design got discontinued. So for what it's worth, this is known as the Clinton tree now, so this is the standard that we refer to.
Can I ask you something else? Couldn't you guys basically take a chop saw up to the top of that thing and just cut off the 14 inches so it would have complied?
Well, yeah, I don't know if whoever installed it knew they were 14 inches off. They get the pole, they stack the pole, assuming that it's going to come out at the right height.
They don't drop a line or something or use a laser measure after they do the install to see if it's per the plan and spec?
They do. I don't know if they did that here. I know they dropped a line for the antennas. But again, I don't know what they were measuring to. 14 inches over 100 feet, 110 feet is it's not that much.
I understand, but I bet it was cheaper than if they cut off the 14 inches than having to pay you and Mr. Ferrara to come here.
I'm sure it would have been. I agree.
Well, it may or may not have been. You know, the pole has been designed to be constructed a certain way. You start cutting off pieces of it, and then you have to refabricate the branches back into it and whatnot. So
that's true.
So it might actually wind up being quite more of an endeavor than it sounds. And to Josh's point, you know, we're not sure which one of those scenarios it is. I mean, it could very well be that the grade is a little different. It means the height of the pole itself is, you know, it's just one of those. We think it's one of those three things. And like as Mr. Cottrell said, probably a combination of them. I guess the point is, too, is that the tower is, now the overall height of the tower, which would include the branches, you know, is actually a little lower than what the board originally approved. The tower part, the superstructure, is inside those branches. So from a practical standpoint, you know, I don't think anyone would really notice. So that's why we have no variances. There's no variances associated with the deviation. Since this is a multi-carrier pole, you know, they have ports in here for up to 3-4 carriers, I believe, correct, Josh?
Yeah, actually more than 3, but.
And I have a question on that. Sorry, it's Kevin. Where would those antennas go, above or below?
Well, it really would depend on the carrier's need. Another carrier might come in and say 90 feet is okay for what they need to cover, or they might come in and say, well, we actually need to go up to 110 feet.
There's room, Josh. So there's room for a carrier at either location, correct? One above, and then perhaps two below.
At least one above. Yeah, without any kind of one above. There's a port, and then there's several ports below.
Right. So I mean, Mike, you know. I will editorialize for a minute, but you know, manufacturing 10% tolerances, I mean, I don't buy it. So, you know, I don't tell my boss my numbers can be off by 10%, and you know, I think that's a lot of fast talk, guys, to be totally blunt with you.
It's on the manufacturing drawings.
So John, Joshua, you have a standard to meet. You said that they didn't even measure it with a line, you know. I'm pretty disappointed. So how many of these have you come before and had to go and tell the towns have been higher?
This is the first one.
It's not very common. I'll let you answer that to you.
We can't say that. Well, what it's not, we have not been before the board for these types of deviations. some of them are approved as field change, to be honest.
Yeah, this would never be approved as a field change. A field change, for example, if you hit some huge boulder, right, so you had trouble with your foundation, maybe that's a field change. But a field change is, I mean, I know that you guys think this is no big deal. Oh, it's only a foot off and the thing's 110 feet high. I think that the chairman is just trying to figure out how does this happen because, I mean, quite frankly, T-Mobile's had a string of bad luck in Clinton Township. The plan keeps on working with T-Mobile. Remember what happened when that cow went up? Right? You had the location of the cow, and originally you were going to apply for a setback variance from the road. And I had suggested that you should make the thing at least the height of the tower away from the road. And so you guys agreed to it. Thank goodness. What happened to that cow? The cow collapsed. I mean, that's the first collapse that Clinton Township has ever had with a cell tower. And it was the predecessor of this thing. It's just a string of bad luck.
This is a custom tower. There was a lot of work put in to make sure this thing looks right. There really was. I mean, the issues we're talking about.
Right. No one's right. No one's disputing how it looks.
I think it looks very good.
Yeah. Actually, the thing came out looking just like the board was hoping and expected. If anything, it looks better. Okay. So that's not the issue.
Right. And I'm just trying to understand if right now, at least from my perspective, you make the point that it's below the 115. I'm trying to understand if you now go and put another carrier's antennas on top of yours, are they going to be higher than the 120 or whatever was?
In other words, what the chair is asking is the board's been told in the past that, and maybe the technology has changed, and maybe that's the answer, but the board's always been told in the past that you need at least 10 feet separation between center lines of different carriers. So if you need a 10-foot separation here, where does that place the top antennas, hopefully not peeking out through the top of the branches? That's really his question in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
Can Mr. Cottrell, could you – I mean,
that would depend on how tall the other antennas are, which I wouldn't have that information.
We can give some information though that might be germane. So the next available height up is a center line of 100, and that would be 111 feet, correct?
Correct.
And that would be 111, 1 inch basically.
So what you're saying is, since the center line of the T-Mobile antennas are 101 foot 1 inch, that the tower height is 111 2 inches. If the center line was at 111 1 inch, I mean, is the top of that antenna going to stick out through the top of the branches? That's the chairman's question.
Right.
That would leave just so you know, the 10-foot is obviously was a design requirement for years, correct, Josh? The 10-foot separation?
Correct, yes.
So we're generally used as, you know, a rule of thumb, if you will. But have you seen in your experience the antenna lines actually be closer than that?
I have, yes.
And
from what I understand, the 10-foot separation is just a rule of thumb. To avoid any kind of interference, RF interference, but from what I understand, what I've been told by RF engineers, you can actually get closer without getting the interference. They just might have to do a little study just to make sure that interference doesn't happen. But they have gone. I've been on sites where they are closer than 10 feet.
But then perhaps to make sure that we meet the chairman's concerns. You know, we can agree that the next highest center line on this pole is going to be 110 feet and not 111 feet.
That's my concern because as you described this, it's still in the tree, and the tree does look good. Let me tell you, I've heard people say it, so it does look good. The concern I have is that it becomes a problem down the road. So if it still can be held to 120 with that center line, my concerns are lessened.
You mean, by the way, you mean 110, not 120?
Yeah, 110, sorry.
So the condition would be the next higher antenna center line cannot exceed 110 feet, and the tops of the antennas cannot stick out through the tops of the branches. Is that correct, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Or either or, John. That's for you guys to consider too. Because if
they certainly don't want, right, they don't want the antennas to stick out. So maybe it doesn't matter, Kevin, what the center line is, as long as the tops of the antennas don't stick out beyond the branches.
That's my concern. But I'll let others chime in if they have a passion on it.
Because otherwise, John, they would have to, if it ever were to stick out, because you have a lot of room there, it would have to.
If they're going to stick out, they're going to have to come back to the board and do something to raise the branches up there without, you know, negatively impacting the looks of the tree.
Correct. And I guess my question is, could they increase the height of the branches by 4 inches? To bring it to 115.
And we'll put it this way. I would not suggest to the board a condition like that, sight unseen. Even though it sounds like, what's 4 inches? It seems to be safer to have some sort of condition where the highest antenna cannot have the tops of its antennas exceeding the height of the branches. And then if you want to increase the height of the branches, you come back to the board.
Right.
And John, just one point to raise on that, specifically on those 110 inches, probably for the benefit of those in the call, and myself included. What's the calculation rationale for that 110, just so, because I know that that's clearly a very important point here, just so I better appreciate how meaningful that is.
Yeah, it's interesting, because we used to have conditions which I think make more sense. Top of the antenna cannot exceed a certain height. But the carriers said, and the antennas always change, and they always measure to the center when they do their calculations. So the carriers have basically convinced the board over the years to use this center line stuff. If you ask me, if the issue is aesthetics, you should always be looking at the top of the antennas, but that's just me. The board has gone with center line of antennas. Why? The carriers asked them. Why did the carriers ask them? Frank, can you or Mr. Cottrell explain why the carriers want to use that center line measurement instead of the top of the antenna line measurement?
It's generally where most of the RF energy is coming out of the antenna, is central to the center line area. So when you go center line, it's easier to keep different carriers equally separated vertically. So I mean that's really the reason.
I think the answer is because it's more convenient to the carriers. It's got nothing to do with, you know, what's the better way of measuring it for the board.
Or for that matter, what I was thinking, you know, is there a safety issue beyond a certain height? There's a risk to the public. You know, if that's the concern, that was what I was trying to drive at.
Yeah, I think I'm not testifying, but I've heard enough of these cases. It's a safety issue. With radio frequency coming off those things would be having it within 10 feet of you. So in other words, it doesn't really matter how high the thing is. It's a question of aesthetics. As long as it's securely fastened to the monopole, it doesn't really matter. As long as it's 10 feet away from humans, number one, and number two, enough separation between antennas so they don't interfere with each other. And that's why the chair was asking before about if there'd be sufficient distance now that this T-Mobile antenna is at 1 foot, 1 inch higher than it was approved at.
But maybe, not to belabor the point, but maybe to satisfy or better answer to Sandra's question, these are line of sight transmissions. So height is critical for distance. It has, as John said, I've had antennas on buildings that we've owned and we yellow tape around, you know, the safety distance, and it's maybe a little more than 10 feet, but not much. So it's certainly not a matter of public safety. It's, as probably Frank said, the height's critical to a telephone company in terms of distance traversed. So the higher, the better, generally speaking.
Well, the higher, the better with this technology. When these small cells come in, it's going to be the opposite.
It depends on the bandwidth.
Well, yeah, then the height's irrelevant because, I mean, it's still line of sight, but, you know, you're going through somebody's window.
Right.
Thanks. That's very helpful.
So it seems to me, because I had the same concern, I wanted to make sure that we weren't going to add anything above what's currently the top of that tower. It seems to me that a center line limit of 110 feet for the highest antenna, with the proviso that the antenna is not protrude above the current of 114 feet, 8 inches for the faux branches, would satisfy what our concerns are.
Okay, so you want both. You want both maximum center line height of 110 feet and the top of the antennas can't poke out through the branches. Is that correct, Brian?
Yep. Yes. And I think the 110 feet will provide the second, but it's best to have that insurance. And that should wrap it, I think. Neatly. Good. The way it is.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that everybody thinks it looks good.
Yeah. Frank, I've had people even comment that it looks better than some of the ones they've seen around. So
this is the first time I'm getting the feedback from you, so I'm glad to hear that. For how many years it existed only on paper?
This has been a long time coming.
Yeah.
I've driven past it myself a few times, so just to check it out.
I mean, this is going to sound pathetic, but before COVID, if I drove with my family, I'd point out, yeah, that's it. That's the tower.
Right.
Could I just ask one clarification? Relative to the splices, you mentioned it could be the grade, could be the first splice, could be the second splice. What if it was just one splice off by 14 inches? Is the testimony that there's no safety issue, the pole is secure, it's not a problem?
Well, actually, that's a good point, right? Because if the splice is off and it's longer, that means there's less of a splice. If the splice was off and it was shorter, there'd be more of a splice. I didn't even think of that. Mr. Cottrell, I mean, has anyone looked to see on the plans what the splice overlap is supposed to be and what the overlap on the splice is? Is Mr. Cottrell still there, Frank?
I don't know. All I'm seeing is the plan right now, so I can't see anybody else.
I was muted, sorry.
There you go.
Well, we weren't out there during the installation. The only way to find that out is if the installer kept notes and documents detailing what the final splice lengths were.
That's not reassuring. I mean, but just so you know, so the planning board has a bit of a history. And it's only in Clinton Township. It's like none of my other boards. It was another antenna. It wasn't T-Mobile. It was AT&T. And they came in to do a co-location on it, and they didn't submit a structural report. So the board said, you know, you've got to submit a structural report. And the unnamed attorney, who was not Frank Ferraro, because Frank would never make a bald-faced representation, oh, you know, they've done it. It's not a problem. So the board said, well, if they've done it and it's not a problem, we're going to make it a condition of approval. It's got to be submitted before you can get your permits. Well, lo and behold, the tower was not constructed per plan and spec. It couldn't have supported the co-location. The board wasted its entire time on the hearing approving the co-lo. They had to come back with an application to reinforce the entire pole with fiberglass mesh and then come back again for a co-lo. Again, Clinton Township. AT&T. So, for whatever reason, it happens in Clinton Township. It doesn't happen in Raritan Township. It doesn't happen in Greenwich Township. It doesn't happen in Bernards Township.
if this is a concern, may I make a quick suggestion? You've got shop drawings. Each section length is called out in terms of precise measurements. So you measure from the bottom of one section to the top of, the bottom of section number one to the bottom of section number two. Subtract that from the overall dimension of section one, and you've got the overlap. So it's basically a tape measure job. If field verification should not be an issue, if this is a concern.
And I guess the board would have to decide, is it a concern enough that you want them to do it before you vote on the application, or would you vote on the application and make that a condition, like, you know, the other tower, but then risk, if they have a problem, them having to figure out the solution and then come back again?
I'd be very surprised, John, to find that we have a problem. We would absolutely agree to do it.
And by the way, Frank, the name of the attorney was Judy Fairweather, and she would be she'd be very surprised if there was a structural problem.
But I'm saying we'll look at it.
John, in my opinion, though, either scenario requires them to come back. One's a guarantee. One is they probably don't have to. So I would go with they probably don't have to.
That would be my suggestion too. Have them.
Yeah.
Check it, and if it's a problem, then they come back. If not, it's good.
Okay, so the exact condition is to check the splices to make sure that they are per plan and spec, correct?
Within specifications, right?
That sounds like, yeah, within specifications. I mean, if that's acceptable to the board.
So put it this way. But they would be on shop drawings. They wouldn't be on the set of construction drawings, correct?
That's correct.
No, leave that information beyond me. Yeah.
It wouldn't be on the site plan set. It would be on the tower manufacturing drawings.
Okay. So check splices in the field against the manufacturer's construction drawings to make sure that the splices are within specifications. That's what we're saying, Frank?
Yeah. And with that, I mean, we can produce, do you want a letter submitted to the board or to the board's engineer or to the building department? How would you like that?
I guess it should be a signed and sealed letter by a New Jersey licensed PE to the board. And yep. If the board has a question, they can send it to the township engineer or whoever they feel like sending it to.
Okay. That sounds good.
It's unfortunate. It's not something that obviously it was set out to do. It's not exactly advantageous. Although the center line's above a foot higher, I mean, a foot here or there is not, it's not a big advantage from it.
Listen. Have the engineer do it. Don't make any representations. Trust me.
Yeah.
I hate to keep talking about this, but I wouldn't be surprised after a few windstorms, given the nature of the taper joint, that the thing may have settled a bit.
Settled.
And it's obviously, it's highly unlikely this is a structural issue, given the dimensions of the overlaps. And the fact that we only have one out of three or four antennas at the top. So, and I'll be quiet now.
Does anybody else on the board have any questions or comments? How about, this is a public hearing. Is there anybody from the public here? I see some other folks on up there, the next applicant or just...
I noticed some of them as the next applicant, but maybe just ask Kevin if anyone.
Yeah. If anybody have any comments from the public, now would be the time to state your.
Not hearing anybody. Not hearing. Denise, is anyone raising their hand, Denise? She shook her head no.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, going back to the board here, everybody, is there a a motion to
grant amended site plan approval subject to the two conditions we just discussed, right?
Correct. That's what I was getting to.
I'll make the motion.
I'll second it. Roll call.
Mr. Glazer?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins?
Yes.
Bless you. Ms. Kleinham?
Yes.
Mr. Lazarus?
Yes.
Mr. Millay?
Yes.
Mr. Scheich?
Yes.
And Mr. Sommet?
Yes.
The motion carries?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. Have a good night.
You too. Okay. So now we have the second of our public hearings tonight. We have ExxonMobil Research and Engineering, 1545 Route 22, Lot 30, Lot 17, 30, 31, 41, Lot 31, Lot 1, Block 3002, Lot 1, Application 2021-01. The applicant is seeking a waiver of site plan approval to relocate an acid tote tank at its existing office research facility. And I believe we have Mr. Bauman here, right, representing the applicant.
Yes. This is Tom Bauman. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yes. Nice to meet you.
Good evening, all. Good to see you again. Tom Allman, Dave Pitney, on behalf of Exxon. This is an application for a site plan waiver for a relatively minor change to the cooling tower area of the property. We have one witness tonight, Rob Michello. You may recall that we have been here before for not only site plan applications, but also site plan waiver applications. Your ordinance allows for site plan waiver applications to be granted essentially where the applicant can demonstrate that the proposed change in the site plan is not significant, doesn't really change the existing site plan circulation, doesn't cause any negative impacts, that sort of thing. And we'll obviously try to demonstrate that to you tonight. We think that we can, given the minor nature of this improvement. So Rob Michelle is our witness. We have two fellows here also from Exxon, Chris Adamski and Trevor Buskirk. If needed, they can testify, but I think Mr. Michello can probably cover this himself. So unless you have questions, maybe I'll call Mr. Michello and we'll begin.
Yeah, let's get Mr. Michello and Mr. Behrens sworn. So can both of you unmute there, Mr. Behrens? Great. Raise your right hand and repeat after me. Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're going to give in this matter will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay. Mr. Malin, go ahead.
Mr. Michello, here you are. You previously testified before this board, is that correct?
I have.
In fact, for the Exxon property and prior Exxon application, just briefly remind the board who you are and your credentials.
I am a licensed professional engineer in the state of New Jersey. I work for Gladstone Design. My license is still current in the state, and we've appeared before this board a couple of times in the past on both the main site plan application and a couple of site plan waivers for the Exxon campus.
Any questions regarding his qualifications as an engineer?
Anybody on the board have any questions? If not, he's been before us, and I think we can accept him as an expert.
Good, thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Michelle, do you have control of the exhibits? Can you put them on the screen for us?
Yes, I do. Just give me one second here.
Okay.
All right.
So, Rob, we'll mark these, Mr. Drill. This will be A1. It's obviously an aerial photograph of the site.
Just a quick question. So these have not been submitted with the application package, I take it?
This was submitted as an exhibit that's not part of the application. I think
okay.
That's correct.
Yeah. Sorry. So, yeah, so A1, identify A1, because I can't. What does it say in the lower right-hand of the block?
So it's entitled Overall Aerial Exhibit. It's dated March 1st, 2021, and it's sheet 1 of 1. And this will be A1.
Okay.
You can zoom it out again, Rob. I'm only seeing – there you go. Maybe you can – just briefly, I think the board knows the site, but maybe just some of those key features and then talk about where we are on the site tonight with this application.
Sure. So this is basically a state aerial, which is actually superimposed with Google imagery. And what we're looking at here is the overall Exxon campus is comprised of six lots that total approximately 757 acres. And the various lots are identified, outlined in yellow, with lot 1, lot 17, lot 41, lot 30, lot 31, and then lot 1, which is out by Sandhill Road. And they're outlined in yellow, as I pointed out already. And again, they encompass 757 acres of the overall campus. Route 22 is on the, I'll say, the high side of the north side of the plan. Route 31 is on the west side of the plan. And generally in the northeast portion of the site is the main Epson campus. So you can see my pointer on the screen here, which I'm circling it, is the main campus. 815,000 square foot office research building is located in the parking lots associated with that building.
Well, can you zoom in a little bit on this? Is that possible?
Yes.
That might help a little. There we go. That's better. Okay.
Yeah,
so
Mr. Malman, all these exhibits tonight, do me a favor. Email an electronic copy and send in a hard copy of each exhibit to Denise tomorrow.
Yep. Will do.
Thank you.
All right. So just to briefly tell us where on the site we're talking about tonight.
So the focus of tonight's application is really in the service yard area, which just to orient everyone again, the main building is in this darkish black color here on the plan, and this is the office component of it and the pilot plant component of it. And in the rear is the service yard, which was the subject of the prior site plan applications where it was expanded. And if you look on the plan here where my pointer is, and I'll pull up a second exhibit shortly, there's a series of cooling towers that are existing. And the subject of this application is just right adjacent to one of those to that cooling tower that's on the site plan. And I'll show you in more detail momentarily when I zoom in. But these cooling towers are screened by fencing and evergreen trees that are existing on the site as well as berming that were put there when the site was previously developed.
Okay.
So I'm going to zoom. Yes, Tom.
Do your next slide, please.
Sure. So my next slide, and we'll entitle this one A2, Mr. Drill.
Yeah, this is Exhibit A2. And what does it say in that bottom right-hand corner?
Yep, give me a second for it to zoom in here. It is overall proposed site plan exhibit, also dated March 1st, 2021.
And just for the record, it is color rendered, correct?
That is correct. It's taken from our site plans, our existing conditions plan, and we've color rendered a number of the components on the plan here, just to point out some of the improvements that are around the campus so we can focus in on the chiller area itself. So the existing building is in this tannish color that you see on the plan here, again, 850,000 square feet. There's some existing outbuildings such as a warehouse, hazardous waste storage building, water tank. Then we have the engine test labs, the barrel storage, the fuels, the lubes. All these improvements were put in as part of the prior approvals for the rear of the site or upgraded at that time. And the focus of this application, again, here's the chiller pad, and I'm going to zoom in to that area. So you have the chillers that are located here. There's seven of them. And then right adjacent to them is a staircase. And then adjacent to that is a small pad. It's approximately, give you the dimensions on the pad. It's approximately 5'7" by 6'7". And it's a platform that's going to be added to the existing platform that's out there already. And we're going to be installing a new acid tank on top of that platform. So what I'd like to do is pull up the...
Just briefly. Yeah. What's the purpose of the acid tank?
Okay, so...
I like acid, but I mean, what's it being used?
Yeah, so what happens here on the campus right now is inside of the what they call their primary, I get their exact term for you, the central plant boiler room, which is inside the main building, okay? ExxonMobil has what they call a 250-gallon acid tote that they have delivered to the site every month basically. And those acid totes hold acid, which is used by the makeup water in the chillers to reduce scaling on the chiller system. So that tote and pumps are actually located in the main building, and there's a pipe that runs all the way out to the chillers that bring that acid to the chillers as we speak right now. What Exxon would like to do is eliminate having to have these totes delivered to the campus every month.
What is a tote? Other than, you know, totes or boots?
What's an offset tote? They call it basically it's basically a 250-gallon tank. It's a self-contained tank that's delivered to the campus with the acid already inside of it. It comes on a truck, it's on a pallet, and it gets delivered and dropped off at the loading dock, and they move it inside of the building to this area in the central plant where it's hooked up to the pump, and they pump the acid over to the chillers as it's needed for the makeup water. So what Exxon would like to do is eliminate the need to have these individual totes delivered on a monthly basis and instead have a 550-gallon double-wall tank installed at the chiller pad itself, so that this way they can have a direct delivery of the acid brought to the site and pumped into the tank like they do with other chemicals on site. This way, then, it reduces the need to have materials moved around the site, and it's located right adjacent to where that material or that liquid is being used. And what I'd like to do is pull up the actually, this isn't an exhibit. This is one of the plans that were submitted.
Was it color drop when it was submitted?
No, it was not. It was black and white. And it's still black.
So keep it as A2.
Well, this one was already submitted.
Right, this part of the plan. He's saying no need to mark it as an exhibit. I agree.
Right. So this is entitled Section House and Process Tower Water Systems Cooling Tower Plan. This was prepared by Vanderwild Power Group, and it was submitted as part of the application. And you can see the stairs that are there, the existing stairs. And this is the outline of the platform that's being added with the new tank. And there's going to be a pump associated with that tank to pump the acid into the cooling system.
Robert, you actually use your pointer?
Yes, it's I can't mark it. Hold on, I could actually put a mark on it just so you could see it. So here's the tank, and there's a pump here that will pump that acid into the cooling system. There's actually a fill connection that's right adjacent to it that they will use a delivery truck to come up, connect right to that fill connection, and fill the tank from there. So there'll be no need to have deliveries of these 250-gallon tanks to the site anymore. They can have the 550-gallon tank filled up as needed over the course of the operation.
So there'll be some modest reduction in truck traffic because you'll have fewer trips to bring this to the site. Some modest in decrease. And in terms of safety, I think from Exxon's standpoint, this is a safer operation than they have today. Is that fair to say?
That's correct, because they're not moving a 250-gallon tote or tank, if you will, you know, from the loading dock to the central plant area. Now it's being delivered directly to this tank, and there's less handling of the material on the campus.
And you mentioned before this area today is currently screened. Do you expect anybody will see this? Any neighbors will see this?
No, this platform is approximately 3'10" above grade. It's completely blocked by the chiller equipment that's on the campus today and the screening that's in place. And it's actually in an area where they have their full containment system in place for any and all spill that would happen to occur. So it's completely in a contained area that's part of their on-site containment system. So it's all in a controlled space.
Can I take a no change in site circulation, parking, landscaping, anything like that?
No, this area is actually part of the loading dock itself, so there's ample room for delivery trucks to show up, pull up next to this connection, fill it up, and then make their turns and re-exit the loading area.
Okay. And you may have heard me say at the outset that the board has the power to grant a site plan waiver. Essentially, if we can show that these proposed improvements don't have a significant impact on the previously approved site plan. Would you say that's the case, given what you know about this?
That is correct. There's no increase in impervious coverage as the platform is going on top of the existing pavement that's there today, and it's completely screened by the existing equipment that's in place.
Okay.
I have no further questions.
Kevin, you're muted.
Thank you. Any questions from anybody on the board?
Hi, this is Kate. I'm not on the board directly. I'm just kind of sitting in as a standby here. My question about this is related to the consolidated quantity of acid here. So if the tanks themselves are going to be increased in volume, is there any like public safety concern about any potential ramifications from a spill, given that we're having an increased volume at that same site as opposed to trucking it across the site?
The area that we're talking about has is part of Exxon's containment area. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to exhibit. Hold on a second here.
Oh, yeah, A2.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to A2. Just give me 1 second. Here with what regenerates. Here is the A2, which is the colored version of some of the components in the rear of the site.
Yes, we can see it.
Okay. So the entire area that's behind the main research building that is back here is part of a containment system that Exxon has on site. So given the fact that they have fuels, lubes, and other type of material that's actually being transported back and forth through this area, it's part of a full containment system for the storm, for both berms that are on the ground if something were to spill, and the stormwater system itself that has valves and controls on it that if something were to spill, they could shut off stormwater collection system from this entire rear portion of the site and isolate it before it were to get into their storage ponds, which also have another level of protection on them as well from a liquid spill. So if 500 gallons were to spill, they have more than ample storage in the rear of this campus to control that spill before it ever leaves the site.
Could I just, for the record, Ms. Johnson is a member of the public, so can you just identify yourself for the record and give your address? And Mr. Chairman, you obviously asked there were none, so then you intended to say, are there any questions from members of the public, right?
Right. Yes, correct.
Okay. So, Ms. Johnson, Kate Johnson, which is Johnson, correct?
That's correct.
And your address?
Domicile 20 Main Street, Annandale, New Jersey.
Okay. So, Denise, you got all that? Just thumbs up. You don't have to unmute.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And Ms. Johnson, this is part of I'm not testifying, John, or anybody, but this was an expansion of some of their operations and tanks, and there was a lot of testimony and understanding of their, collection, for all of their lubes and oils. So this would fall under that is what they're saying.
Yeah, for historic purposes, and it was submitted with the application, but the big underlying approval resolution was Planning Board Resolution 2016-09, which was adopted on November 7, 2016, and that memorialized the grant of preliminary and final site plan approval, C1 and C2 variances, and site plan ordinance exceptions to permit construction of a variety of site and building improvements. And then they came back for an amended approval, and the board granted that amended approval via resolution number 2019-05, which was adopted on September 16, 2019. And it memorialized the grant of amended preliminary and final site plan approval to make permanent the existing temporary truck stacking lane, truck turnaround, and security gate at the campus entrance on Route 31 and related site improvements. And then without going into it, they've been back for some site plan waivers for a little thing here, a little thing there. They had one for increasing the height of the stacks, and now they're on to this. But this is maybe either Mr. Michello or Mr. Malman, could you give a brief description for this member of the public who really doesn't have the history of the facility, what happens at this Exxon facility?
A lot. Rob, why don't you go through some of the operations? I mean, this site's been here for a long time. It's office research. There's all sorts of stuff stored outside. But, Rob, why don't you do a quick overview of what's going on there?
Sure, Tom. As the building alludes to itself, it's an office research facility. So there's 850,000 square feet of building space in here. And it's besides offices, they also have what they call a pilot plant, and they do in the rear of the building where they set up small, I'll say production types of facilities to test creations of certain fuels and lubes and things of that nature. They also have lab space inside the building as well. And then in the rear of the site, you see all these different color-coded components. They have an engine test lab where they actually set up engines in that lab, and they run through those engines different fuel mixtures and lubrication mixtures to determine how those engines react to the different combinations of fuels and lubes to determine, you know, how that would work on a regular production automobile engine. And with that, they have different storage areas to store materials and the different types of fuels and lubes that they use. They have sample warehouse where once they mix these certain things, they have to store them until they use them. There's process chillers for not only for cooling the engines and the test facilities and the different, I'll say, pilot plant sections of the building. So they have various different research that goes on in this facility to determine certain, whatever types of research that they're doing for fuels and lubes, you know, for their products that they sell.
I must say, that's an excellent description of what happens at this place.
Thank you, Drew.
Understood. I fully understand what happens in the space. My sole concern was related to what has been engineered for existing conditions versus proposed, right? So the only concern I had was that utilizing an existing platform, having it expanded for that acid tote tank, and that the existing, as it's proposed, can accommodate any environmental concerns or overspill as proposed. Given what's existing there without health concerns.
Right, the system that's designed there can handle this 550 gallons if it were to spill.
Understood. Thank you.
Any other questions from the board or the public?
Okay. If not, I would assume this, we know the drill on the big three reasons to waive site plan.
It sounds like they're going with no significant impact on previously approved site plan.
Which sounds
like it's actually one of the three we have to meet. We probably could be more than that, but I think A1 in the ordinance rather makes the most sense.
Okay. Does the board have any questions or comments on that meeting of that item one of the waiver criteria? Seems like it's pretty straightforward. Small change. Okay. So is there a motion to grant the waiver from site plan in accordance with that provision that it's a insignificant impact on the previously approved site plan?
I'll make the motion.
I'll second.
Thank you. Roll call.
Mr. Glaser?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins?
Yes.
Ms. Flyhand?
Yes.
Mr. Lazarus?
Yes.
Mr. Millay?
Yes.
Mr. Shike?
Yes.
And Mr. Sime?
Yes.
The motion carries?
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, all. Good seeing you.
Okay, good night. Thank you. Good luck. Good night.
Thank you.
All right. We have a little bit of new business. The first one is the vouchers. Denise did share the vouchers. I've reviewed them as well. Are there any questions or comments on the vouchers?
I move to pay the bills.
Thank you, Mr. Mullay. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Shike, right? Roll call.
Mr. Glaser?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins?
Yes.
Ms. Kleinhand?
Yes.
Mr. Lazarus?
Yes.
Mr. Millay?
Yes.
Mr. Shike?
Yes.
And Mr. Sumay?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. So we have reports, but real quick, before I jump in reports, I wanted to just mention something that may tie in with the ordinance subcommittee. But I know we've talked in the past, and I think we were charging the ordinance subcommittee, but I don't remember. So I wanted to bring it up here, was the concept of a, and I'm, if I don't do this justice, Mr. Higgins or Mr. Drill or whomever, jump in, but I think we were looking at seeing if there was a tech review committee or something that could look at minor site plan items and could approve them and avoid an applicant having to come forward to the board. And the classic example was, you know, LED light fixtures in a parking lot, as long as, you know, the fixture cuts and the lighting didn't change, you know, the amount of light spread out, you know, there's no reason that they needed to come in and go through the whole process, or if they had to replace HVAC systems. So, you know, if this is still something that the governing body, and, you know, we've got Mayor Millay and Councilman Glazer on and the rest of them are still inclined to do, perhaps this is something we ought to put a little skin behind in the next, you know, couple of weeks, months.
I wholeheartedly agree. We had I in my first month was greeted with a situation where someone may have needed a waiver, an appearance before the board to replace stairs. Now, there was a lot of other things going on involved in that, but certainly I think that kind of a provision would reduce the burden on some of our taxpayers and businesses as well. So I think that would be a good thing. It's something I've been meaning to do for a while and try to draft and just haven't gotten around to it. So I know Mr. Drill has sent some information that I have and can share, and as has Ms. Cecil, who's our township attorney.
Yeah, and this plays into a recommendation from a county work we did a few years ago where they partnered with us like on sort of economic development to make the township simpler to deal with, let's say. So I do think it's consistent with that. I'm with Brian. I wholeheartedly support this.
Yeah, John had provided East Hanover, if I remember. Is the
Ridgewood, I think I have too.
Ridgewood. That's it. And you know, we had done some work with like-kind replacements for generators, HVAC compressors, things like that, but we didn't carry that quite far enough, and this would be the next step in that direction.
So does it make sense perhaps to have the ordinance subcommittee take a shot at it and then come back for the next meeting, or, you know, I'm just trying to think of a way to help move it across the floor.
You know what I would suggest, since Bill and I are on the ordinance committee, Brian has done some work. Why don't the three of us put our heads together and come up with the best way to, gosh, I don't know, get a draft together and you know, move it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Brian? Or okay.
I don't know if we could commit to the next exact planning board meeting, but at a future meeting, soon.
Right. We can get it done.
Oh, sure, Brian.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make it too stressful or too much pressure. It was more just if that's the good process, let's start with that. I think there's some good original artwork already done by this John Drill shared with us, and then with your three minds, I think we can get pretty close.
And, you know, the other guilty conscience item, I think, is the rezoning on Route 31.
Yeah.
You know, where we really have a dog's breakfast full of little bitty things. So, and that might be amenable to the same kind of conversation, you know, with Brian and Bill and On that, we might even loop in our planner.
He's already taking notes. I see him. He's taking notes.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. Like Route 22, it's philosophical. Do you leave all the little bitty inclusions? Do you zone for the future? If you zone for the future, that's more simple. How do you make sure that pre-existing, soon-to-be non-conforming uses are properly protected? Those kinds of things. So it's a, you know, it's kind of a meaty thing that would be kind of fun, I think, to do a good job on.
Mr. Higgins, I've heard you describe Route 31 as both a dog's breakfast and a dog's dinner. Can you please pick one and stick with it? Or?
You know, I knew. I think the proper British term is dog's breakfast, but I always use dog's dinner.
I think that Tim Lazarus should join the discussions on the Route 31 corridor.
He should research dog breakfast or dog dinner and get back to us.
I think that's a quorum if my math is correct. So that's a planning board meeting.
I would step aside for you.
What I might suggest on Route 31 is we might divide it into some separate sections and work on, I don't know if we try to do the whole thing because there's kind of different sections that might have different issues. But as we talk about that, maybe we can explore that. Some might be simpler than others.
We don't want to lose the connection, the tie to the master plan revision.
And it also,
true.
I'm happy to delegate some of this. I think on a high level, we all agree needs to move forward. And bandwidth-wise, maybe better to have someone else sit in on.
Yeah, as long as we don't have a quorum, I'm happy to, you know, I'll help. Or if John wants the vice chair pro tem wants to step up. Anybody else?
Whatever works.
We could get if Brian. You know, if Brian focuses
technical,
how to avoid the board. John is the pinch hitter for Brian, effectively on Route 31. And we still don't have a quorum.
Okay.
I know he wants to do it.
I said I would.
Oh. Okay. Right. I maybe some reports. Is there anything from council? You guys all see the report hierarchy there.
I am super excited that Bill Glazer has joined the council. For one, it means I can delegate the report from council to Bill.
I defer to the mayor on these matters.
No, I think last meeting was pretty light, and the biggest thing that we had, I think, on that agenda was a refinance of outstanding bond anticipation notes, $7 million or so, and the interest rate was well under 1.5. So I think we did pretty well refinancing those. It'll set us up well for the long term. And then upcoming, March 10th, we'll be introducing the budget. There will be a bit of a bump this year. Last year we did pretty nicely keeping it low, but this year we have some capital items we have to do, including replacing the entire stock of the fire department's SEBAs, their air packs. They're all at the end of the found out are no longer going to be supported. So when they break, they're gone, and that'll be a hefty chunk of change. So that'll be the 10th for introduction. I think we'll hopefully also have us moving forward with a long-planned and long-funded project to do a refurbishment of the existing basketball courts at Bunt, which has a crack in it the size of the Grand Canyon. We'll take those four courts, turn two of them into one tennis court and a whole slew of pickleball courts because pickleball has just taken off in Clinton Township and elsewhere. So we'll end up with two basketball courts as well out of the four that we have currently. And I'm trying to think there's one other thing. Oh, I think we'll be updating our police organizational ordinance probably next week as well.
And we did adopt the Highlands ordinance and the stormwater ordinance that I think was referred back.
Right.
Anything from ordinance subcommittee, open space?
Ordinance, no.
Environmental?
They met on February 4th. We met on February 4th. Talked about goals and action items for the year. Still talking about that, what it is. They are going to sponsor a rain barrel event in, I think, April 10th was the tentative date, announcements to go out. And they're working with open space, that's in the Windy Acres educational stuff and trail maps. So it's moving along nicely, I would say. funny enough, maybe a John Joel question. Can I continue to represent planning board on environmental? Because it's a bit awkward. Mark Strauss is already representing council there, so it's a bit weird to have two people from council there.
You're class three now, right?
Yeah. That's what I thought you'd say. So we need to find someone. Sorry about that.
Yes. So if anyone here has an interest in also serving on the Environmental Commission, please consider it and let me know.
Quick question. Who's the class two member of the planning board right now?
Rich. Rich is on the Historic Commission.
I had been doing this environmental for a couple of years, so
it can be an alternate, though, can it not?
I don't think so. I think it's got to, if it's not class two, I think it's got to be class four. I will check on that, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I checked on it and I forget where I ended up on it. You might be right.
Well, Phil can't do it, unfortunately, so he's got a lot of more important things now. Other important things. If I have to, I'll go back on it. They love me over there. Not.
Don't everybody jump at once.
Yeah.
It sounded like Mr. Semay was volunteering to me, no?
Well, there's no urgency to it, so. Next meeting. Next council, because that's at a council. I have to do that at a council meeting, so that's I have some time.
And I guess you all saw, as long as we're here, like, did you share the town of Clinton is looking to put a warehouse in up on 31?
That's what I wanted to discuss too, Kevin. I wasn't sure if that was appropriate, but I mean and it wasn't the communications that went around. I know, but that's tomorrow night. Their meeting is.
Can I just make a suggestion? Private individuals do whatever you want. But if the planning board or the board of adjustment or the township council, for that matter, were to oppose some application in some neighboring municipality, you could expect retaliation. That's all I'm going to say. It's not a neighborly thing to do. Now, individually, separate issue. Knock yourself out. The thing is scheduled for tomorrow night. And if you are going to participate, and you identify yourself, please don't say you're on the planning board. Say you're here on your own behalf and on behalf of your spouse, your partner, whatever. But don't give any indication that you're on the planning board or you're on the township committee.
You can say you're on the Environmental Commission because then you are. I'm just kidding.
And especially not the Environmental Commission. It's manufactured Christmas trees, so especially not the Environmental Commission.
It's not manufactured here, I don't think.
Yeah, no, that's.
My suggestion is to not talk about it in this public setting.
Okay.
Anybody have anything else?
I would just note for those who may not have noticed, in Governor Murphy's budget, the high school really got whacked pretty good by about 10% of our state aid. The local school district got a slight bump of about 18,000, but that was also recently in the news, just throwing that out there. Mm-hmm. And I assume it's due to dropping enrollment, but the new school budget, the school funding formula.
All right.
I motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, everybody. Thank you. See you next
time.
Thank
you, everyone. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks.
All righty. Good night, everybody.
All right. Good night, Brian. Good night, Denise. Thank you. Good night, Sam.